Hey, this is Miss Melissa, the Bathtub Mermaid, and you are listening to Tales from the Tub. This is the Dog Days of Podcasting for Sunday, August 23rd, 2015. This is a Sunday brunch piece I wrote for All Things Girl almost 2 years ago. It's called The Hottest Blood of All.
They say the sea is cold, but the sea contains the hottest blood of all, and the wildest, the most urgent. All the whales in the wilder deeps, hot are they as they urge on, and dive beneath the icebergs. The right whales, the sperm whales, the hammerheads, the killers, there they blow. Hot, wild, white breath out of the sea.
It's 6 in the morning, but we're in La Paz, Baja California Sur, which means we're also below the Tropic of Cancer. Sunrise comes early in the tropics. My parents, my husband, and I are jammed into my mother's bright yellow VW Beetle. It's a cute car, perfect for two adults and a dog. The back seat, I have discovered on more than one occasion, was not really meant for occupation by humans, even one like me who was only 5 feet tall. We park at the truck stop on the road outside their neighborhood, and my mother calls her friend Eduardo, our tour guide for the day. He shows up in his white van, which already holds 4 people, though we won't really meet them for another couple of hours. First in Spanish, then in English, he gives us our itinerary. We will drive for 2 hours, and then stop for breakfast in Ciudad Constitución. He'll ask us for our breakfast orders about half an hour before we get there. Then we'll drive for another hour, and then we have 2 hours on a boat to go whale watching. After that, there will be lunch, and then 3 hours back to La Paz. The morning air is chilly, and we're all wearing windbreakers or fleece pullovers or hoodies over khakis or board shorts. Typical attire for a coastal excursion. My husband and I had been up at 4 a.m. the day before to catch our flight from Dallas, and our connection was delayed 3 hours, so we didn't get to my parents' place until 10. To say that we're tired and punchy would be an understatement. Good thing, then, that all we have to do is snooze. And we do. The van is designed for napping. Fuzzy, my husband, moves over to the side seat because it reclines. I stretch out on the dual seat we'd been sharing. Sometimes I nap. Sometimes I watch the scenery change from cactus-filled desert to maize fields to orange orchards. Constitución, which I've always been told is unattractive at best, is apparently Mexico's breadbasket, somewhat akin to California's Central Valley. Every so often, Eduardo points out a rattlesnake sunning itself by the side of the road. From the van window, I see herds of burros, the odd horse, bunches of cows. As we approach the point of deciding what we want for breakfast, a thick fog settles over the road. My mother seems to think this will keep the weather cooler. I know that it will actually trap heat. No matter, our menu options are given. Eggs with ham, eggs with chorizo, eggs with machaca, shredded beef, birrio, goat, in a sort of soup, birrio au jus, or birrio quesadillas, which they refer to as birrio queso tacos. I've never had goat, but anything with melted cheese can't be bad, and I believe in trying new things. I choose the queso taco. So does Fuzzy. We snooze in the van a bit longer, and then we're at a cute local breakfast place lined with long rows of tables. Breakfast comes with refried beans, freshly squeezed orange juice, and coffee that is surprisingly good. Most restaurant coffee in this part of Mexico is either Nescafe or Senka. As coffee snobs, this is a constant concern.
And they rock, and they rock, through the sensual ageless ages, on the depths of the seven seas, and through the salt they reel with drunk delight, and in the tropics tremble they with love, and roll with massive strong desire like gods.
Our van mates are a soil scientist from DF, Mexico City, aka the Distrito Federal, and his wife. Immediately my stepfather, who is also a soil scientist of sorts, bonds with the husband. The other two in our van are a British diplomat, roughly my age, attached to the embassy in DF, and his 7-year-old son. My mother has arranged for the 4 of us to have a private boat, and when we learn that our panga, a motorized skiff about 10 feet long, seats 6, she invites either pair to join us. The diplomat, Karim, takes her up on the offer. After breakfast, we ride another hour, and then we're at a small town where the entire economy is based on whale-watching season. Through government intervention, international ecotourism trends, and international preservation work, the people of this town and many others along the Baja coast have struck a balance between the business of whale watching and the need to protect and preserve both the animals and their watery home. We are fitted with bulky life jackets, which we immediately realize are more comfortable if worn closest to the body, with our hoodies over them. For the rest of the day, we look like colorful, lumpy penguins, but we don't care. The six of us clamber into our boat, my mother and I taking the middle bench. We've brought water and cameras. Our captain, an older gent, steers us out into the lagoon. We know, both from Eduardo and from personal research, that these lagoons are basically whale nurseries. We also know that while the waters of Baja California are home to 39 different cetacean species, today's trip will be all about gray whales. These are the gentle giants of the sea, filter-feeding baleen whales. It's probably 10 minutes before we see the first spout. We're not the only boat, of course. The other boats are 18-foot skiffs, bigger versions of our own ponga, holding up to 16 people each. Whenever a whale spouts or breaches, everyone rushes to the side and reaches toward the water. The boats are designed to be almost impossible to capsize, but it's immediately obvious that the extra 1,700 Mexican pesos was worth it for our private experience.
And enormous mother whales lie dreaming, suckling their whale-tender young, and dreaming with strange whale eyes wide open in the waters of the beginning and the end.
Most of us think of humpback whales when we think of whale watching, but at least here in Baja, it's the gray whales you come to see, and it's evident from their behavior that the whales are also here to see us. Quite social, it's almost as if they're trained. We are in the water with four other boats, and there are three or four mother-calf pairs. The mothers, massive creatures that you never see in their entirety, stay farther away from us, monitoring the situation. But the calves are like puppies, going from boat to boat, rolling over to blink at you or meet your gaze with theirs. They have eyelashes, begging for scritches and belly rubs, smiling and showing off their baleen. There are strict rules of engagement at play. Officially, you're not supposed to touch the whales, except they are actually asking for contact. The boats are allowed to follow the whales, but are not allowed to block their paths. When the calves dive under the boats, the captains pull the motors from the water, so the propellers can't do any harm. For nearly 2 hours, we are part of a gentle, happy free-for-all of boats juggling space, tour guides making sure everyone has a chance, and, most importantly, caution with these amazing creatures. Then, our boat pulls away from the others. Our captain has seen the telltale flattening of the water that signals an impending breach. For 20 minutes, the six of us have a mother and calf all to ourselves. The calf, at 3 months old, roughly, is already longer and twice as wide as our ponga, but there is no fear, just curiosity. By the end of our time, I've been covered in whale water, and I know that whale tongues are rough like those of kittens, and that their hide is soft like suede over jello, and that even the smallest calves are already hosting barnacles. I also know that something deep inside me has been profoundly affected by this experience. Whales, when you're close to them, when you look them in the eye, radiate this ages-old, preternatural wisdom that you can't quite grasp except by the edges. The calf and I locked gazes, and it felt, for those precious seconds, like I was in the center of the universe and made of starlight and whale song. All too soon, we're walking back down the pier on legs that are shaky from being at sea. We turn in our life vests, buy the photo that was snapped as we launched, and get back into the van. Most of us are quiet until we reach the lunch spot where we are served a plate of lobster, shrimp, and fish fillet, and given our choice of beverages. Almost every adult opts for beer, the not great but better than Pacifico Tecate Red. Sunburnt, soul-touched, there is nothing better than fresh fish and cold beer. Back in the van, we find our voices and observe that there's deep irony in the fact that a group of highly educated scientists, writers, and engineers had no greater vocabulary during the boat trip than, wow.
And all this happens in the sea, in the salt, where God is also love, but without words. And Aphrodite is the wife of whales, most happy, happy she.
Poetry quotations are excerpts from the poem Whales Weep Not by D.H. Lawrence. Poetry snippets were recorded by Clay Robeson. The Bathtub Mermaid is written and produced by Melissa A. Bartel and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 International License. Music for this episode was provided by Mebio's Music Alley, a great resource for PodSafe music. Visit them at music.mebio.com. The opening song is Soap in a Bathtub by Stoney. The closing song is You Can Use My Bathtub by Little Tom. The Bathtub Mermaid is produced and recorded using Boss Jock and Audacity. You can contact me by leaving a comment at the website, www.bathtubmermaid.com, by finding me on Twitter, at Meliss, M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, or by sending an email to Meliss, M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, at starfleet.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, never let your bathwater get too cold.
Still it shows, but you can use my bathtub. Understand, you can use my bathtub. Yes, you can.